Welcome to Physiotherapy Chats, a Singapore Physiotherapy Association podcast.
Okay, so I'm Shi Min, Principal Physio at Sengkang General Hospital, and I'll be hosting this episode today. So in conjunction with Parkinson's Day, on 11th of April, this episode and the next is a special release for anyone or carers of people with Parkinson's interested to find out more about this condition. With me today is Sylvia Liu, Principal Physio at NTUC Health, who has vast experience working with individuals with Parkinson's disease. She'll be sharing about the condition and also addressing some common questions and misconceptions surrounding the topic. So let's welcome Sylvia to this episode.
Hello everyone, just give me a minute, okay? I'm just gonna share my screen. And yep, I think, Shi Min, am I good? I think I am.
You're good to go, yep.
Okay, let me just click on the, Yeah, so hello everyone, welcome to the podcast today. My name is Sylvia from NTUC Health, and I've been specializing in Parkinson's physiotherapy management for some time now. So some may ask why I choose to specialize in this area. I think this is because my paternal grandfather has tremors in his hands, but no one in the family knows whether he has Parkinson or not. So that has sparked my interest, and you know, there's still a lot more to discover with the ongoing research. I hope that this session will be an informative one for the audience, especially those who have been diagnosed with Parkinson and their caregivers or family members. So like what Shi Min says, right? So this is in conjunction for World Parkinson's Disease Day that falls on 11th of April. We are also trying to raise awareness of this condition, Parkinson's disease. And today's podcast will be the first of the two-part series to be launched by Singapore Physiotherapy Association. So do stay tuned to the second part of the series. So first of all, right, just to introduce to you, you know, about NTUC Health, it is part of the family of NTUC social enterprise set up to address needs of working families. So our purpose is to bring happiness, dignity, and peace of mind to individuals and families by delivering trusted care good enough for ourselves and our loved ones. So we provide a comprehensive suite of affordable and quality health and elder care services. We have outpatient services, you know, that comprises of dental clinics, family medicine clinic, as well as rehab and wellness centers. We also have services for seniors who need some support. You know, that would also include our home care, daycare, and active aging program. And lastly, we have 24/7 residential care. Currently, we have 3 nursing homes, and there will be another 3 more coming up by the end of 2021. So without further ado, right, just to inform the audience here, this session will be 30 minutes long. We will be covering on what is this Parkinson condition about, including its risk factors and diagnosis, briefly be more aware of other types of Parkinson, then moving on to the staging and timeline of this degenerative condition. Lastly, we will end off with common FAQs that you may have. If you have any questions, right, please feel free to email me directly at Sylvia, that is sylvia.l@ntuchealth.sg. So, what is Parkinson? First of all, you may hear about dopamine when we talk about Parkinson. So, dopamine is a neurotransmitter that helps to relay messages in our brain. It helps to maintain our happy mood and regulates our body functions such as movement and mind. So when one experiences some motor Parkinson symptoms, it means that 60 to 80% of his or her dopamine has already been lost. So what are the physical Parkinson symptoms, otherwise also known as motor symptoms then? Now, motor Parkinson symptoms can be remembered using the mnemonic TRAP, T-R-A-P. So T meaning tremors. This can happen not only on hands, fingers, but also on lower jaws and legs. R means rigidity. This means that the muscles are stiff involuntarily. So often this is presented in the form of stiffness and hunchback. A, absence or slowness of movement. These are other classic signs of the condition. If this occurs in the legs, it's often described as the feeling of feet glued to the ground or freezing. So freezing can also happen in hands or when you speak. Lastly, P, postural instability or balance issues could occur when rigidity and slowness of movement occurs. Individuals will also lose their sense of balance as the condition progresses, where falls can happen 2 times more often than healthy individuals of the same age. You may have seen someone in your neighborhood with hand tremors or slowness in walking, but don't assume immediately that this person has Parkinson. We will cover the diagnosis of the Parkinson in the next few slides. So Parkinson can, you know, could also affect the non-physical functions of the body. So this includes having digestive issues, depression or fatigue, sleep issues, pain, slowness in thinking, processing skills, and dementia. So most people with Parkinson frequently report of fatigue, impaired handwriting, daytime sleepiness, slowness, tremor, muscle cramps and forgetfulness, of which highlighted in green in the two slides that you will be able to see on YouTube. So in this series, we won't be covering these non-motor symptoms in detail. You may refer to the Parkinson Foundation website for more resources at www.parkinson.org. To highlight the severity of both motor and non-motor symptoms, the severity of, you know, both motor and non-motor symptoms will increase as the condition progresses. Now, one may ask, how prevalent is Parkinson in Singapore? So based on a study in 2004, about 0.3% of Singapore's residents aged 50 years and above had Parkinson. With an aging population, the numbers will likely increase further. So can we predict if we will have Parkinson? Many studies have been carried out to find out the risk factors, which can be broadly categorized into two groups, genetics and environmental factors. So genetics can occur in 15% of patients with Parkinson. In Singapore, if the patients are interested to investigate further, or they could be, you know, recommended by the neurologist, their blood will be sent overseas for genetic testing. The common gene to detect is the LKK2. To add on, gene testing is not a diagnostic test, but greater participation in such research could help scientists identify Parkinson earlier and aid in prevention or management of the condition. So moving into the broader and what I feel are the more interesting risk factors are the environmental factors. Your risk of Parkinson increases if you are, first, males and of older age, that is more than 60 years old. So though males have 2 times more risk than females, this trend on gender and age is less noticeable in the Asia population. Second, exposure to pesticides, herbicides. So we do have patients, you know, from Malaysia and Indonesia who are farmers that you will see sort of more Parkinson diagnosis, you know, in them. Thirdly, dairy product consumption. If we take more dairy product, you know, we have more risk in having Parkinson. This risk increases by 13 to 17% for every 200 grams per day of extra milk or 10 grams increment in cheese intake we take in. If you are not aware, our daily requirements of dairy product is about 700 milligrams per day, which, you know, is equivalent to 3 cups of dairy light, 200 ml of semi-skimmed milk, or 150 grams pot of low-fat yogurt, or 30 grams of cheese. All right, then you may ask, what can I do to reduce my risk of having Parkinson's then? The brain cells in Parkinson's are said to undergo oxidative stress. So hence, researchers are in search of, you know, numerous sources in hope to delay cell stress and death. Before I start sharing, please do not pick up new behaviors or change in your diet, as it may result in more detrimental effects, which could cause you to have other conditions like stroke and heart disease. All these could be fatal, even though your risk of Parkinson is lowered. Now, first of all, smoking. So nicotine, right, has shown to have some neuroprotective features. So that means that it protects your nerves and brain. So the risk for smokers who have, you know, which means that who have been smoking for 1 pack per day for 30 years or 3 packs per day for 10 years have lower risk than those of lesser smoking frequency. So next, right, for caffeine. So caffeine helps in improving dopamine, conveying the signals across the neurons in the brain. So 3 cups of coffee or tea could help in reducing the risk, but the actual dosing remains unclear. In the 2014 study, there's no further benefits after that dose. Some say 1 cup is about 250 ml, but it still remains unclear, you know, how, what is the minimum dosage to have in order to reduce your risk of Parkinson. So tea has additional antioxidants, especially green tea, which aids in protection of our neurons. Now, when we have high uric acid levels from eating nuts, we could have gout, where it causes painful joints similar to arthritis. However, in this case, it has been shown that those with gout has reduced risk of Parkinson. Do you know that uric acid is also a powerful antioxidant that could protect the nerves in this case then? Now, lastly, for physical activity, we know the importance of exercising as it improves the signaling of dopamine and fires the brain cells better. There are studies to show that there is lesser risk of developing the condition later in life if we have been physically active during high school or college days or at age around 35 to 39 years old. So for those who already have Parkinson, one study has shown that high intensity exercises with 2.5 hours per week, which adds up to 30 minutes for 5 days, it can help to delay Parkinson's symptoms for 2 years. Now, lastly, for the environmental factors, I'm going to talk a bit more on alcohol. So the Singapore study that is done in 2014, right, found a non-significant decreased risk, and there's a modest effect for those who drink at least on a weekly basis 1.3 drinks, that is, you know, one standard wine glass of red wine, as compared to those who drink less. Yeah, so some interesting facts for you to know. Now, for more information, you may refer to the paper named Singapore Chinese Health Study 2008, which looks at our local habits and how it affects the risk of Parkinson. So though we may know some of the risk factors associated with Parkinson, most may be idiopathic, where there is no reason. So diagnosis of Parkinson is not very definitive as well. So this is usually diagnosed by the neurologist or the one that's specializing in Parkinson, whom we call them as movement disorder specialists. So just like any doctor's consultation, you are open to seek a second opinion. Do ensure that you are comfortable with a doctor whom you can trust. He or she should be able to share with you on unbiased and latest medical information and allow you to make informed decision in your care. The neurologist will listen to your symptoms carefully and conduct some simple bedside assessment in the clinic. It's important that the patient follows the neurologist or the movement disorder specialist for at least 5 years so that he or she can help you titrate your Parkinson's medication while observing any other symptoms presenting itself over the time. These symptoms may suggest other conditions similar to that of Parkinson. So I will move on to talking more about other types of Parkinson here. So other types of Parkinson could be presented in very small numbers globally, with our main condition, Parkinson's disease, more commonly in 96.9% of the overall diagnosis. So one reason is the difficulty in diagnosis of this other types of Parkinson. Remember in the earlier slide, that there is no definite radiological or blood test to diagnose, and the neurologist may take 5 years to confirm a diagnosis of similar Parkinson symptoms. So these are the four common Parkinson-like conditions that could mimic Parkinson symptoms, but each has totally different presentation and prognosis in the medical field. Vascular Parkinson occurs commonly in patients with stroke when they have diabetes and hypertension or high blood pressure, which predispose them to have a stroke. So lower limbs or the legs are more affected with freezing. Remember, freezing is when you know the feet get stuck on the ground. Yes. So for them, the physiotherapist will teach some tips to aid in unfreezing the legs during walking. But this can be ineffective as they can't concentrate on the tips to do so. So there's minimal effectiveness in using medicine to eradicate this phenomenal tool. Next, drug-induced Parkinson, as the name suggests, is when the consumption of the drug blocks the dopamine action and creates Parkinson's symptoms. So rarely do this group of people develop Parkinson eventually. Removing them from these drugs may reverse the symptoms. Moving on multiple system atrophy, also known as MSA, is when there's overproduction of protein, which leads to dying of the cells at different parts of the brain. So this results in difficulties in executing movement and autonomic functions. So autonomic functions takes place without conscious effort, including maintaining of our consciousness, breathing, heart rate, and digestive system. As MSA affects other systems in our body, individuals will not fare as well as those with confirmed Parkinson. Thus, Parkinson medication has limited effectiveness in managing the symptoms. Similarly, progressive supranuclear palsy, also known as PSP, has a similar prognosis. In this condition, the individual has symptoms and deterioration similar to Parkinson and Alzheimer's disease. Hence, their cognition loss is more pronounced and could affect their movement safety. For both PSP and MSA, the patients may experience fast deterioration or new symptoms within the first year of diagnosis. Actually, when managed well, someone with Parkinson can take 10 to 20 years to move across each stage of the condition gradually. This will be further discussed in the next slide. So neurologists and nurses would use Hyung and Yah scale to let you know the stage of your Parkinson's condition. Some clinics may use a detailed scale, such as stages 1, 2, 2.5, 3, 4, and 5. Over here, to simplify everything, I will be using the wholesome scale of stages 1 to 5, which I will be going through now. So the nurses and the neurologists or the movement disorder specialists will perform bedside assessment like the UPDRS scale to examine your Parkinson's symptom severity in more detail. So two of the tests from UPDRS are the finger tapping and foot stamping actions to check on the movement speed and amplitude, that means the height, during the routine assessment. Patients are likely to seek medical attention actively when motor symptoms occur, and this often occurs between stage 2 and stage 3. Now, for someone to move across, you know, from stage 1 to 2, it takes about 20 months. From stage 2 to 3, about 85 months. From stage 3 to 4, about 24 months. And lastly, from stage 4 to stage 5, about 26 months. So if one is diagnosed with more severe Parkinson's symptoms at a later stage or has longer duration of the Parkinson's condition, he or she may progress faster across the stages. Now, for each stage itself, right, we can roughly know as well there are accompanying symptoms that goes according to each stage. So stage 1 will be, you know, involving just one side involvement. Stage 2, whereby both sides have Parkinson's symptoms, but balance are well maintained. The moderate stage, which is the stage 3, the person will have moderate symptoms, balance will be affected, but still remains physically independent. Stage 4, whereby someone may experience more severe symptoms, but it's able to walk or stand independently. And last one, stage 5, whereby this patient could be confined in a wheelchair or on the bed and requires assistance from their caregivers. So lastly, I'm moving on to the FAQs now. So I have tried to compile some of the common questions that some of my patients would ask. So first, so why did I get this condition? There is no definite reason why one has this condition. You may consult your neurologist or your movement disorder specialist, but do find out more about this condition and talk to your family as openly as possible. Lastly, start taking charge and making changes to your health to delay the Parkinson's symptoms. Next question that I often being asked would be, will I die from Parkinson? So people diagnosed with Parkinson can have a normal lifespan if they manage their health appropriately. So continue to stay active to prevent the effects of immobility, which could lead to development of chest infection and joint contractures. Another question that I get would be, will I ever recover from Parkinson? There has been many research studies surrounding Parkinson diagnosis and cure, especially for the past 10 to 15 years. So what's important is to live life to the fullest and manage your own health to prepare for the medical breakthrough that could happen one day. So, you know, some of them who were diagnosed with Parkinson, they are very concerned about their family. And they might be asking me or any of the healthcare professionals here, is this condition contagious? Is my family in danger? So Parkinson is definitely not contagious. Though there has been no genetic links to Parkinson, it's still important to identify the symptoms early. Remember your TRAP, T-R-A-P, your motor symptoms, and seek proper medical advice as soon as possible. So how long more can I live after I'm being diagnosed with Parkinson? So people with Parkinson again can have normal lifespan if their symptoms are properly managed with their caregivers as the condition progresses. So everyone's symptoms, as you can hear from our podcast or our YouTube presentation today, that it differs from each other, you see. So do consult your neurologist, your movement disorder specialist, or you know, even your allied health professionals, your therapist, for a detailed assessment so that they can develop an individualized management plan for you. So what are the available treatment options out there? Don't worry, this will be covered in part two of the series. So stay tuned. All right. So thank you very much for your kind attention in this podcast and this YouTube presentation. Do email me directly if you have any questions that you have pertaining to this. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Physio Chats, a podcast series brought to you by the Singapore Physiotherapy Association. Follow us on Spotify and our YouTube channel for future content.